This is a production of Cornell University.
Student Assembly Meeting, October 14th, 2010.
The time is 4:45. I'm calling the Student Assembly Meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll? Here.
He is unexcused.
President.
Here. He is on his way. Here.
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 Who?
Kerr.
Tardy. Late.
Here.
He's present.
What?
Here.
Yes.
Here.
Moving on to approval of the minutes. The October 7th meeting minutes were sent out to you by email. Unless there are any amendments to the minutes, they are approved. Are there any amendments? Seeing none, the amendments are approved. Open microphone.
Open microphone. So if there is anybody in the audience who would like to make a point on anything that is not currently on the agenda, please feel free to do so now. I see we have a representative from Kaplan. Thank you for attending our meeting. Thank you for that. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to speak on something that is not currently on the agenda? If so, please feel free to come up to the open microphone. Seeing nobody, the open microphone session is now closed.
All right. Moving on to announcements and reports. SUNY Student Assembly update, Representative Danzer.
So the SUNY Student Assembly fall conference is taking place this month, October 29th to 31st in Davidson. Currently, I am going to be unable to attend as I will be gathering for our purposes at the end. I'm not President Danzer, that I'm sure he will be able to attend. So we are looking for at least one, if not two, members of the Student Assembly who are interested in representing Cornell at this month's SUNY Student Assembly Conference. The costs are all paid for by the Student Assembly, so it will be a free weekend at other colleges and colleges representing Cornell in front of all the other SUNY schools and community colleges in New York. So this is a great opportunity to kind of get involved in the things we're
broader than just the Cornell community, but also making sure that it's also a phenomenal networking opportunity just to talk to other schools, see what their student assemblies are like, what their thoughts are on different issues that are confronting the state. So if you are interested, come to me after the meeting or shoot me an email, matt@mansfieldfemale.com, and we'll talk over that.
Is there any add something to to that? Yeah, and just to add on to that, I believe that we have to have names in by tomorrow, and if not by tomorrow, it's coming up very very soon by the deadline that we have to give the names of the reps that we are going to send to the SUNY SA. So if you would like to go, please email Matt Danzer ASAP so that we can get on that.
Are there any questions? Just so you know, because we do receive state money, we do have a voting seat on the SUNY Student Assembly, and it is a great opportunity to get involved. The president of the SUNY Student Assembly is actually a trustee of the SUNY system, and they do some legislative work. So if you're at all interested, definitely get involved with this. It's pretty cool. Representative Jenkins, IV update.
All right, hey guys. Talking here about IV Leadership Summit 11. This is taking place in November. Yes. October 14th. Going to be sponsored by Prudential. It actually is from the CEO of Prudential as well as the treasurer who will be speaking along with the president of the university. Applications are going to be on the main website, ivycouncils.org, Monday. And we are only sponsoring from 15 people. However, I do know there are individuals who might not be going to our group themselves. So, if you're interested in going, either email me, cwj27, or go to the main page, ivycouncils.org, and fill out the application. Thank you.
And now we'll move on to VP Nicoletti, just to also give an update about funds.
Okay, do we want to do them all now? Or?
Just do
them. Okay, so Ivy Council has requested $450 from Special Projects. That's 15 people times 30 people per registration fee. That's $450. So by the spending rules that we passed a few weeks ago, Vince and I have approved that, and we're submitting it now as an oral report. Didn't have enough time to get into the written agenda for you guys to determine whether you're okay with that or you'd like to refer it to the Appropriations Committee. So I don't know if you want to take any motions.
Are there any motions at this time? If you'd like, go ahead, Ronia. Well, there's no need to motion to approve, only a motion to disapprove, I guess, to refer back to the committee. Seeing none, I guess that expense is approved. And now we are going to move to business of the day until our... Yeah? Okay. Go ahead, Representative Braun. Questions for Representative Brockman. One last announcement, which did make it onto the blog, Representative Rao.
Thank you. So, on Tuesday, I emailed all of you. We're going to have a debate, the dining debate, on the merits of K-3 versus conventional school day. So, I don't know if you know how much you guys know about, you know, the different types of eggs, but conventional eggs, typically cost a lot less. HPA eggs, cost savings, you only buy a pounder. Debatably, more environmentally friendly and also more humane. So we have a representative from the Humane Society of the United States flying out from DC. Really, want to spend time and Professor Joe Regenstein, food science farmer, he's an expert on eggs, will also be talking. So we're going to have this debate 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday. Really need a lot of me and Gail Hyman if you could come out and support or if you want to participate. If you care about the price of eggs, if you care about the eggs that you're using, it's Hollis Auditorium in Gold Rock Center. Thank you.
Any questions for Representative Rao? Seeing none, we will move to business of the day, SAFC appeals, VP Nicoletti, whenever you're ready. Want to go?
Yeah.
So you'll see that you'll have two resolutions, 23. Those are going to be automatic. We will be voting on these today, so we're just moving them to business of the day. So the first part, resolution 23, it's the new one that was passed out to you is a little bit extended because the Appropriations Committee meeting, the Appropriations Committee actually met twice or three times in the past week and a half to get through all the appeals. They met on Monday, they met on Wednesday, and then they met Friday, and then they met this past Wednesday. They went through a lot of appeals. They've put a lot of work into this. So first off, I'd definitely like to round of applause to VP Nicoletti and the entire Appropriations Committee for getting through it. And now, you all have 4 minutes to present Resolution 23.
Yeah, so apologize about that. Last week, thank you, Representative Rock. So, kind of same deal as last week, and before we start, I just want to clarify for those of you who was a point of contention last time of what is our role as the student assembly in the NDA appeals process. So the appeals framework that was written up last spring by the NJC co-chairs and other parties basically said that the Appropriations Committee, when it hears an NJC appeal, has to rule on it in determining if the SA is in error in a certain way. Mm-hmm. It doesn't leave any language about how the SA should be doing any of the determination in a form like this. However, in the past, and as I was encouraging now, don't abandon the guidelines when you're trying to make a decision. Obviously, we can look at other issues that the Appropriations Committee and the FAA is not, but the guidelines are still important, and you should be pretty much adhering to them unless there's some real reason not to be. So you don't have to rearrange the executive word. Well, you know,
do you want to start with the appealing group?
You turn to the last group, we heard them on Thursday night before fall break, and the FAC had determined that they could not receive funding because they submitted two co-sponsors or two co-work.
So if we could just actually, Society for Natural Resources, I know you're in the audience, you can step forward. So the way the process works here really quickly, actually if you could just explain the process of the appeal, how it works.
Yes, so like I was saying before, so Society for Natural Resource Conservation came to the Appropriations Committee on Thursday, and the Appropriations Committee had determined that the SAC did not have in their application, so Society for Natural Resource Conservation has the ability to come and appeal to the Student Assembly. So they're going to kind of tell you their story, and I guess just before they get to that from the Appropriations Committee side, and just in terms of the entire thing, this group had submitted to speak for organization about this, and they did not receive funding from the FAC.
If you could please state your name and year for the record, that'd be fine. That'd be great. Your name and year for the record?
So the year is
Could you please speak up? You just have 30 more seconds to present your... With the SFC, you have a minute, if you'd like to respond to that. Moving to the speakers list, Representative Desai is first.
Yes, thank you, Tom. Just before I comment, I do agree with you, but I think that this isn't exactly a logical rule of the limits of sponsorship, and you know, it's possible that other people may tend to share their views, but in making a ruling like in our vote today, we can't really take into account whether or not we feel who is right enough, because these are the rules that we're doing this budget application on. So while this one may be like a thing of whether or not it's just or not, another group that didn't follow the rules such as not turning in documentation, I mean, making the same argument that they don't think that rule makes sense and it is your funding for it. So, you know, from my personal point of view, the assembly, the rules clearly say the SEC guidelines under eligibility. First thing, I participate in no more than one avoidant organized event for academic semester. And while you guys could have funded it under an individual event, that may be something to keep in mind and keep looking at other events and plan these things out. And it's sad that there are groups that don't see like small groups like within the guidelines and get them out of the store. So, you know, I would recommend maybe having some funds on this list.
because of the circumstances of the placement and everything that's in the SOP, and as you can see, might be a successful project which doesn't abide by the SOP guidelines, or maybe other funding sources, but in my own personal point of view, we can't overturn the SOP specifically and how the SOP is not there in incorporating their guidelines.
So I'd also encourage, though, the Assembly to look at the reasonableness of the rules and make your own interpretation of the reasonableness of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
My one question to you, or to the SAFC for clarification, is if they had put this event under a personal, as if it was just on their budget and it wasn't a core organized event, would they have received funding? I think it's on. Representative Mensa?
Thank you. You know, I think that when we hear this case here, you know, we should look at the intention of behind the co-sponsor rule. And they have our co-sponsorship, so one that two organizations are able to get more funds than they can receive if they were applying on their own. And being that this organization did not even reach their cap, you know, I don't think it's fair to deny them the funds for that. And I'm also a bit frustrated if this did in fact happen, that at a budget hearing meeting you make the claim that the SAFC looked over the budget and did not criticize or take issue with the fact that you had the two co-sponsorships in there. You know, I think that is a major fault if that it did in fact happen that way. So I would vote to fund this organization for the outlined reasons.
Representative Kerr. And this is the last step in the process. So. Representative Block?
I just heard from the leader comment that the resolution today doesn't have to determine the justification behind the rule, essentially whether or not the rule is followed. I have two questions for the SAFC, though. If we were to pass this resolution, can we still get done funding? Simply because, like, if we were to pass the resolution and we needed an SAFC, My second question was just in the general of the entire resolution. How does passing the resolution help students then?
In what regard?
Like, does it provide any benefit?
Oh, you were talking about that. As a sponsor of this resolution, I would say that it provides benefit to those who are disbelieving him. Funding is wrongly denied and allows them a fair shot at getting that funding from their peers to be published in the new guys in the same number. Question.
Representative or VP Raps?
Hi, thanks for coming again. So being part of the Appropriations Committee, there was a little problem that I kind of picked up on that I wanted to ask Dan about. So how was one of their events chosen over the other to be funded?
Yeah, I don't know why they want to be funded.
Okay, because I know you were on both, so I was just pleased didn't have you there. Or I know you were on the case that decided not to fund for bananas, so I was just wondering, you weren't there for me, so I just... Okay. So when I saw this case, I had a couple of different thoughts. The first was that when we asked SAFC, they did say that it is in their guidelines that you can't be funded for more than one student organization. But at the same time, I think that's really stupid, to be honest. I think that any organization should be able to work with any other student organizations on campus. We have over 900 of them for a reason, and we should be fostering communication between these organizations and coalitions between them. If we have a lot of numerous organizations, like the SAORC is looking at right now, where a lot of people are doing similar projects, we should be funding and we should be advocating for people to work together rather than apply for different separate budgets. So speaking as a totally subjective, not even looking at the FAFC rules, which I totally understand is a whole different set of guidelines, I would urge you to just pass the $500. They, at the meeting, they even mentioned that the student organization they were working with didn't even show up and didn't even help them. They did put on this event by themselves, but have yet to get any of the funding.
Interesting. 30 seconds.
I agree with everything that Natalie said, except for one thing, and I think the SAFC is cruddy just as much as everybody else does. And that's why we have the SAFC Review Committee, and I think that's the right forum for debating these rules, but not on an appeal, because every group had its fair shake of facing an appeal. So don't say that if you give one group the opportunity to get a two or when every other organization probably didn't apply to the needed system. So the basis in the NJC ad hoc, don't debate it in the appeal.
Representative Feng.
Just a quick question, Dan. Did the other group get capped? Did the other group get capped? To Dan, did the other group get
capped? SAFC, to the SAFC. Dan goes. To Dan.
Here. The other group is asking that question. I think he did. And I do not understand. I could look it up right now, but I don't have the right answer.
Okay. Okay. That's fine. Do you think they got capped?
Do I?
I mean, do you remember?
I do not.
Representative Danzer?
Yes, so I'm considering very important. On the one hand, the rules are the rules. I think the crucial rules, otherwise you have one group putting a whole bunch of things on their budget and then going around to try to spend on a whole bunch of other four kinds. I think that rather than
of the events that was already coming up. And so this group was told the day, August the day before this bananas event, that they did not receive funding for it after they already spent the money. It's problematic, and I do not want to give students, put students in the bill for an event that benefited other students when the decision to do so was made on the curve. Besides that, I caution against saying that we'll deny the SAC appeal and simply fund that the SAC special project, because I don't think we should make a habit. I think it creates a moral hazard to say that appeals should be funded through the SAC special project because students spent money after the fact. I don't know, I'm torn on this, and at the end of the day, I think that the first has a very good point. And you don't need to physically look at this from an objective standpoint. Yes, the SAA, no method did not err in their ruling. But was there something there that made you think that you did not put the students in the bill for this event? Well, there is. So that's the approach I'll be taking. I'm not sure if I'm going to get tired of kind of see both sides.
Representative Rao.
I'm confused as to our role in proceeding with the appeal. On one hand, I'm hearing that we should abide by the SAFC rules, that we should, did the SAFC err? Is that the standard that we're supposed to look at? On the other hand, I'm hearing, are the SAFC rules reasonable? And should we take something like that into account? On another side, I'm hearing, this is how I'm going to approach the issue, or we should completely disregard the SAFC rules. So I really don't know how to proceed. I guess my question to the parliamentarian is, what is the student assembly's role in this speech?
Well, hold on. And so while he looks it up, we're going to postpone this discussion because President Gordon has arrived. And we will be moving to back to announcements and debate. So, President Gordon, VP Murphy, welcome to the Student Assembly meeting. Thank you for coming. And so if you'd like to start off with some opening comments, feel free, and then I'm sure we'll have some questions from the representatives. So thank you for coming today. Yeah, we have trouble hearing you. There it is. Thank you.
Has worked it out so again. We're having student leaders from Weill Cornell Medical College, and we had individuals representing the MD students and the PhD students, the GPSA, so to speak, at Weill Cornell. So that was a good meeting. We're continuing to do that. And we will continue to have those meetings and to go to SA and GPSA meetings. The resolutions that you sent me 11 days ago or so, I haven't touched yet. So I won't have any comments on those yet, not to be evasive. I haven't looked at them or done anything related to them yet. I know I have till the 29th, I think, on those. And looking them over, I'll have them to you on time, but I haven't had a chance to interact with those yet. I'm open for your questions. It's good to see everybody. Are you enjoying the semester, everyone?
Program.
by the
So let me try to address a couple things, and President's Court might have others to add. I'll start with the gentleman in particular. This tomorrow, Provost Fox and I are meeting with all of the department chairs of the 90-plus academic departments on the campus, plus the deans, to have a talk about student well-being. This is a direct follow-up to President Scorton's call from last spring about the way forward and a review of the student experience, and it is specifically to address what role the departments have as the department chairs, as leaders, and as supervisors with the faculty in looking at the intersection of academic issues around student health and well-being. So we're going to have a general conversation and a focus on some particular issues, I suspect, and also see what they are identifying as issues as we develop a plan going forward. So that's item number one. Vice Provost Laura Brown is leading the conversation around academic advising. The associate deans of all of the colleges, undergraduate and graduate, have now had two extensive conversations as they're pulling together their information about academic advising. I don't think, in response to your specific question, Ulysses, there's a central trigger we are going to pull to check on every faculty advisor, have you met with your student, and record that as a form of attendance, if you will. But it is certainly a conversation about, you know, how can we make improvements where we need to, and how can we leverage the best practices. And that conversation, I suspect, will go on all spring. It was triggered by a Faculty Senate resolution, but at the Faculty Senate's insistence, it is, or not insistence, but recommendation is being led by those who are responsible, who are the associate deans in the colleges. The Faculty Senate has also just about finished the identification of the calendar committee to take a look at the academic calendar, and that's not only across the year, but as we think about through the day, and there have been some particular issues that have just surfaced that will probably go to that. We are also talking with Bill Fry, the dean of the faculty, trying to figure out what are appropriate issues for the Faculty Senate per se to be addressing through their education policy committees, as opposed to within the colleges. So I think it's a set of conversations and actions. Now, the particular program that you are speaking about with engineering, we chose engineering as a pilot on purpose. Because they have a required course for all of their entering students with Engineering 1050, we thought it was an appropriate place to test this idea of the friend-to-friend, the notice and respond for students. And if we find that it works with first-year students, and that's frankly one of our questions, is are they ready at that early semester to have some of these conversations that you guys would embrace in a heartbeat as a group because you know each other and you've worked together, but or do we need to be thinking about differently? And we'll finish that evaluation this semester, and then one of the things I will be talking to the department chairs is if they have programs that are targeted on first-year students, this may be something we want to bring to them starting next year. So you're right to keep the pressure on, but I think there are many different conversations that are underway that are quite relevant to the issue of student well-being.
CP Murphy covered almost everything I was going to say and more, but one more thing I wanted to mention. I also meet periodically with the faculty leadership and the faculty senate occasionally. I met last night with them. And the last time I met with the University Faculty Council, which is their executive committee, I did talk with them about the advising and the importance to me that this conversation continue in a serious way. And I personally believe that advising is more effective when the people actually sit down together. But not everybody agrees with that. Not every student agrees with that. Not every faculty agrees with that. But I've asked to be sure, and there was a lot of willingness to do this, that the faculty discuss this in a serious way and see what the outcome is. I hope similarly that you will consider fostering, as the student shared governance organization, some discussion among the students about what you think about that. Because in my more casual, more informal interactions with students that I try to do all the time on an ongoing basis, I've gotten varying opinions about that. Some students, for the sake of convenience and for the sake of making sure that they can hit deadlines and things like that, like the fact that there's an electronic option. But you're the body to whom I would turn for more advice about that.
So that's actually a great mention. We did last meeting on the subject at an ad hoc committee to review the curriculum advisors from a student perspective. Cool. It was important to the actions with their presidents and internal. If you'd like to report that to you,
that would be great.
Well, we're still waiting to hear back in that 10 minutes with the point of the student or about the point to the air committee on advisory. We look forward to hearing about this
conversation. Good.
Next speaker was Liz Representative Manning.
First of all, thank you both for having me. I find these opportunities especially valuable. So, over the past month, there have been a series of incidents in the LGBTQ bullying and suicide that have shocked the LGBTQ community at Cornell and around the nation. It was very heartening to see Vice President Murphy's comments on this issue in her fall break message to students. And last week, although I know you have not seen it yet, the Student Assembly passed Resolution 19 condemning acts of bullying on campus. That resolution also requests that you, as the president of the university, reaffirm the university's commitment to combating bullying at Cornell. So although I understand that you haven't had sufficient time to organize a formal response, I was hoping that you could speak to these events and talk about what steps are being considered by the administration to ensure that not only do we minimize bullying on campus, but we also help the LGBTQ community in this area.
Matt, it's always good to see you. Thank you for, as always, very important question. Even though I haven't yet looked at Resolution 19, of course I'm glad to go public today and reaffirm, as I have in the past, very, very strongly the importance of not only supporting this particular aspect of our community that you are mentioning, but the whole community in terms of student health and well-being. And bullying and other forms of demeaning each other, not limited to students, including but not limited to students, but also including faculty and staff, is hugely important to the overall climate of the university, that is making sure that that doesn't happen, or if it does happen, that it's dealt with appropriately. I don't want to comment specifically on a resolution I haven't seen yet, but I will make sure not only that I'm on time, but that I am visible and audible on this issue, either through the resolution or in some other fashion. It's a very, very important issue. So thank you. Yep.
I also haven't even seen this resolution yet, but just very quickly, this is an area, Matt, in the essay that I would really welcome student perspective.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what are the messages from students to students, but also from the administration to students that are heard. Because it's absolutely critical, but I do worry that we sound like preachy moms and dads. You know, you shouldn't do that. You know, be nice to your friends, and that isn't what you're implying. And I know that isn't what you're calling for in the resolution. But we really need some advice on how do students hear a message that is just so vitally important. Obviously one aspect of that is being addressed quite directly in the revision to the recognition policy for the Greek system and making it very clear once again about zero tolerance for hazing. That is a form of bullying. But we need to go more broadly than that. And again, give us some thoughts. It'd be great.
Can I have one more thing? Sorry to take more time with this, but one other aspect I was thinking about as Vice President was talking. The head of the National Endowment for the Humanities, James Leach, who was a U.S. congressman for some time and is now the head of the NEH, is on a civility tour around the country, where he's visiting different parts of the country as the head of the NEH and discussing civility. And I think that there is concern not only in those quarters, but in general, about the lack of civility in certain aspects of our society and on our campuses, and I think including at Cornell. And so I think the context of this very important issue that you're raising, I believe, is the context of civility and how we treat each other. And occasionally a horrendous circumstance will occur, such as happened at Rutgers. But short of that tragic circumstance, there's many other levels at which we still need to work on civility, even though it doesn't get to that level, to make sure it doesn't get to that level. And I want to say again, this is not just an issue that involves students. So thank you. Sure.
Yeah, being a UA in the SA, I get to see her a couple of times, and I always appreciate the opportunity to ask questions.
Sure, me too.
So, now last time at that UA meeting you attended, you spoke about, well, you briefly responded to that resolution that's on your desk about transparency and the salaries of the executive administration. And you said that while, you know, transparency is important, when you pointed out how the Imagine Cornell committee briefs on the website and make those public. But you seem to imply that the essay's need for transparency in this area wasn't appropriate because, after all, administrative salary is less than 1% of the budget, which I think you said like around that. And I just thought about this, you know, in a couple weeks. And, you know, it just sounds like a million here, a million there, eventually it adds up. So I'm thinking, can you tell me just one good reason why transparency in this area, or further in transparency trying to find out how every dollar is spent, isn't beneficial for the community?
Okay. So first of all, thank you for continuing to keep my feet to the fire. I'm still not going to answer you on the resolution because I'm not done looking at it, but I want to correct something you said that's inaccurate. When I was at the UA, I did not speak to the resolution. I spoke to an editorial that was in the Daily Sun in response to the resolution. And I said that the editorial, not the resolution, said that the reason for increase in the cost of higher education was related to administrative salaries. I said that wasn't the case because administrative salaries are around 1% of the budget, which is close to a rounding error and not the cause of the increase in the cost of higher education. So I'm not arguing with you about the resolution. I want to look at it carefully. And please remember, I'm not using this as an excuse. 27 of my 31 years in higher education have been in public institutions where a Freedom of Information Act would reveal this information. The fact that University of Iowa, everyone's salary above $40,000 was published every year. I need to look carefully at what the resolution says, but I want to correct the misstatement that you made. I was talking about the Daily Sun editorial. That was where the statement was made, not by you. In terms of the issue of transparency in general, and specifically monetary, financial transparency, I could not be in greater agreement with you. The specific issue that I have to think about has to do with revealing everyone's salary in the university setting. And you can look at my salary every year for what it was the year past in the 990. I want you to, and I hope that you'll do your homework and figure out where I come up compared to the market and see how that looks. I get a very generous salary and a lot of other perks, and I am very, very proud of the fact that this university treats the university president extremely well. That's not what it's limited to. As far as I remember, the resolution is not limited to that one person's salary. And so, speaking on behalf of other people's salary and other people's privacy, we have to take a more careful look at this. I do want to maintain and say again that salaries at the part of the university that I represent, that is the administrators who are paid the most, are high salaries. They're higher than faculty salaries. They need to be watched very carefully, but they're not the cause of the increase in cost of higher education. So I'll be back to you on time about that resolution. I want to think about it carefully. I also hope, as you think about it, that you'll think as broadly as possible about transparency and think about not only the areas that you have already seen become transparent in my administration, but keep your eye on what's happening the next couple of weeks. There'll be a website going live to which anyone with a net ID, so all of you, every student, every faculty, every staff will have access, that will show the details of how we're reducing the budget based on administrative restructuring. And I want to not overstate this, but I believe it will show going out through fiscal 2014 for every single area in which we're making changes, like student and academic services, finance, HR, procurement, communication, facilities, and other areas, and within each area, a detailed breakout of each subset, that is, each specific set of actions, and what the amount of money to be saved is, and over what time course. And that'll be not open to the general public, but open to the Cornell public, anybody with a net ID. So you and I, your perspective and sensibility and mine are completely in line about the need for transparency, and I stand on my record in that regard. The specific question, as I remember the resolution asks, is externalizing the salaries across campus in a fashion that has not been part of the tradition at Cornell. And a lot of people's privacies are involved in that. We've got to think about that very carefully. So I want to define the discussion that we're having very carefully. And we can continue to have the discussion either now or afterwards. But I'll be back to you soon on the resolution itself. So thanks for bringing it up. It's good. First of all, I don't take offense at anything you ever ask me. Never. I'm very thick-skinned. You have to be thick-skinned to be university president. You have to work with administrators, students, all kinds of people. So it's very important. Please don't worry. Anything you want to bring up with me in person, in the essay, in public, in email, in student office hours, I'm here to serve you. I absolutely feel that way. I want to make some general statements, and then Vice President Murphy may want to talk a little bit about the call for action that I issued last April. One thing I hope, and forgive me, this is not trying to increase the readership of my column, but it's a new year. I hope you'll go back and look at that April Daily Sun column, just to look at the words that are written there, because that was a call to action, was published in the Daily Sun. Secondly, of course, and I don't mean to be offensive by saying of course, every day, in many, many ways, faculty, staff, students, those in SAS, and staff outside of SAS are hugely involved with the student experience. We were in a very, very difficult situation on top of the usual stresses and strains of a hugely competitive institution where you have all been very successful to get into an institution where last year 36,000 people applied for 3,000 spots. Part of the reason people wanted to get in here is the reputation of the place for excellence. It's an extraordinarily competitive, hard-driving, high-stress situation to be in an institution of this type, and it's always of concern. But of course it was of special concern to me facing the situations that we faced last year. We all faced that together and had to join arms and do it. So what I was calling for were the different parts of the campus that in and of themselves are always thinking about this, to think together, to work together on this. So the faculty and the professionals in SAS, the people in the Gannett Health Services, the provost of the university, to think about that. We always need to be spending more time thinking about the climate on campus for everyone, for students, for subset of people, as raised by Matt Danzer, who may specifically be in a climate that can be hostile at times, and many other subsets of the campus always. And I never think that we're doing enough in this regard, and I never will think we're doing enough in this regard. It reflects on the diversity of the campus. It reflects on our retention rate for students from underrepresented groups. It reflects in many, many ways. But the specific call in April was in the context of what happened last year to redouble our efforts to look at those aspects of the student experience that are specifically related to student health and well-being. I want to make one more philosophical comment, then I promise I'll shut up. And that is the beauty and the peculiar nature of the interactions on a university campus are such that you want to have a leader, someone who is able to articulate the values of the university and occasionally insist upon a course of action, as I insisted on raising the level of student financial aid a few years ago. But in general, you don't want the university driven too much top down. You want to have things like the SA. You want to have things like the GPSA, the Faculty Senate, the individual faculty areas, and you want them to retain the ability to do things as they think is best, as opposed to having them dictated from above. It's difficult. It's difficult when you face a campus-wide issue to operate in that fashion, because different parts of the campus are going to respond in a different fashion or not respond or respond at different speeds. And we have to find, not just me, but we all have to find a sweet spot between too much top-down area, too much top-down process, and ignoring things and saying it's just laissez-faire, everybody should do what they want. And this is a good example where I'm trying to find that sweet spot between allowing the different areas responsible to do what they think is right and using my authority and the bully pulpit, both my absolute authority and the persuasive power of the Office of the Presidency, to get people to try to do it in the best possible way. And so at least those are my motivations. Not an excuse, but my motivations for doing it that way. And I do hope you'll consider redistributing, if you would, that editorial to the group so that you can see what the exact words were. And I'd love to get your feedback on those words.
I'll be very brief. I know there are others who want to speak, but there are a couple things that I would say. At the community forum that we held in September, I tried to summarize at a pretty high level the various areas. In student and academic services, health and well-being has been one of our top priorities in the every year I've been vice president, and it's been a critical area for us. There's more that we can do. And so I guess I would say right now that I would put it into three or four broad categories. We're looking at education and outreach, and there's several examples that are involved in that area. We're looking at expanding clinical services. That requires funding sources. We're working with the provost to secure that. You know that there's an active discussion going on in the area of means restriction related to the bridges. The Faculty Senate, as I said, is engaged around a calendar discussion. Your issues are around the timing of exams as part of a calendar conversation, as well as advising. And the conversation we're having with the department chairs tomorrow is to try to get that individual faculty level about what can they be doing. The advising discussion that's being led by Vice Provost Brown is again trying to pull together conversations at the college level, but then looking what do we want to say across the institution. So it is trying to marry faculty governance through the Senate, academic leadership through the provost area, student leadership through SAS, as we all, and the colleges as they're delivering. So there's a lot going on, and I think it's fair to say that we did not need the president's call to tell us to do that, but what it has stimulated is a more coordinated effort in trying to pull together these operations, which I think is essential.
All right, so we've time for one more question.
I actually don't know the answer to that, but I think it's a hugely important point, and I'll follow through on it. Do you happen to know?
I would certainly say in some of the conversations we're having, the answer is yes. What we're doing at the first year is quite different than thinking about what are the needs of seniors. I think we have more work to do, particularly with the sophomores and juniors, and we have some forums where we can think about how we deliver some of the programs, particularly for sophomores. Important point.
A very important point, and if I could expand it just very quickly, even beyond the ESA, it's also very important for your colleagues on campus who are graduate and professional students, because that's can be a very isolating experience, to be working in a laboratory, for example, long hours, much more narrowly cast set of interactions with other students than an undergraduate could have. So it's a very good point. I'll follow up, as I know Vice President Murphy will. I have to go because I have another student event at 6 o'clock, but I appreciate the fact that you asked these questions. Please don't be concerned. Keep my feet to the fire on these things. I'll get back to you on the resolutions. And after you read the op-ed again, or if you ever had a chance to read it, write me if you think there's areas in which the rhetoric could be sharper and help to get what you're thinking about. So thanks for having me.
As always, we're looking for the administration to work out with
Not too late at night.
Would the appealing group please come back? Sorry for that slight intermission there. So remember, we are moving back to Resolution 23. If you'd like to make an amendment to the resolution in response to this appeal, that needs to occur. You may choose any wording you wish. So.
Could I respond?
Oh, yes. And we have Parliamentarian Gould's response to Representative Rao's question.
In response to Representative Rao's question of parliamentary inquiry, it is not especially clear in the charter as to what the Student Assembly's role is. In bylaw 7.5A5, it says the SA also hears appeals from decisions of undergraduate SASC. In Appendix A, which is the guidelines for allocation of student activity fees, section A number 4, on the last bullet point, it says, number 6. If an applicant chooses to appeal the committee's recommendation, the assembly will reconsider the recommendation of the committee. The vice president of finance will provide several copies of complete application materials at any meeting where the assembly considers appeals. And that's about it as to the specificity of what we have to do here today. So I guess it's up to each and every one of you to decide for yourself. And in the future, you might want to try to clarify this if you get away from some of these headaches.
And that is in response to Representative Rao's question. Next on the speaker's list is Representative Agard.
Thank you, Governor. So you said you work closely with your finance officer to go over that thing. We got to the budget. That means your finance person is going to get an individual part with the one closed sponsorship application where it does say that the closed sponsorship group can apply for funding. So I don't believe that they did it here. We do have a committee that's reviewing that MT policy. So I'm saying that a lot of what people have been saying is that's the whole purpose of this ad hoc that you have to do for ladies who wish that so we're not just that all the way.
Just there has been a call to question and a dissent. We're going to move straight into a vote. So we are... Okay, he's withdrawing his motion. All right, next on the speaker's list is Representative Brockman.
So, you know, it's unfortunate that it's not clear, that people aren't clear what our role is. Over the last couple of years, it's been clear to me that if we were just to decide and decide to judge rules whether or not the FSC merit, there'd really be no difference between us and the appropriation committee that brought this forward. That's what they decided. Now, our decision is a little bit deeper than that, and we do get to consider the human element. This has always been the case. I don't know what's unclear about this. But when it comes to us, we do have some the choice to make the moral stand, or to decide, well, this rule itself is unjust, then you can't work with many organizations at many different times. And I think it would do a lot more to change the rule later in years or questions if the FSA took it to the stand on the issue. So I'm going to say that I'm going to vote to fund them, particularly because the event already took place and they weren't giving more warnings and the whole SAC process was coming in, meeting people, working with people. That should have been like, you know, right away you see that on an application that says something here on the SAC. So with that,
so just if that is going to be your vote, there does have to be a motion for that. But is there a motion? Okay, Representative Danzer has a motion.
So I have a motion to change the final vote for the CA, therefore resolve the clause that currently created the non-annual money coming from the Saturday night, blah, blah, blah. So now the FSC did air the non-funding from the Saturday night, which is conservation. I think the motion primarily because they said, you know, they came here to kill the domestic case and be the total student family office.
All right, that is the motion. We are now on the we are on a new speakers list on that motion, on that amendment. SAFC, feel free to respond.
Yes, just a point of information.
Let the group respond. First on Representative Danzer.
Yes. So
I guess the reason why I'm going to support the motion that I made is, well, I made the motion because I think they deserve a vote originally, but I think the reason I'm going to support overturning the decision to be appropriated to the NFA is because at the end of the day, the decision to not fund bananas as opposed to the cost of full events was a completely arbitrary decision that ended up saddling students with $500 or $200, but I think it could be a substantial amount of debt that could have been avoided if they had simply decided to fund the earlier event that was taking place the next day rather than funding the later event that was not that was taking place 2 weeks ago. At the end of the day, there is no guideline for the how to make that decision between the two programs. But I do think that the idea that we should simply allow students to walk away with debt because the FASD made an arbitrary decision, to me, is problematic and makes me feel like the decision of the FASD was problematic enough to vote for it.
Point of information. Right now, that group could choose to take the two profit proposals for the other event and not spend $500. Maybe the commission just says, maybe they want more expensive event. At the appeal, the appropriation committee, we did ask society of financial research conservation, which would be one, because obviously we'd like to two profit proposals. That's just, it's not just meant to push you anyway, it's just meant to be part of
that. That is true, but it was unfortunate that it was on the day that we found out.
Representative Smith.
I'd like to know what I think that, and just to be clear, I'm going off for this conversation because I actually believe you guys are going to have it that way. But I'd like to know the budgetary process. I'd like you guys to describe that because it seems to me that if you're in the budget process, or the budgetary process, the essence of the proposal is to describe them line by line of how it's supposed to go, exactly what the little bit of the entire thing is. If something's wrong or not, this is what I should have to say. Why I'm asking what it is. What the focus is on, then it seems to me that the other thing did later, then I'm also going to find out for the hearing process. Not necessarily if there's what everybody else is talking about. But also, and in principle, the essay, the paper I had in the essay, we spent from the essay to you, before the church.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Next on the speaker's list is Representative Kerr. Representative Pendleton.
I agree with the comments and the motion on board. I do, however, think that we should actually adjust the wording a little bit more in that I don't think discussing it or not, the last bullet point is enough for us to have to add in and not in the position we're not seeing and process or not also with the first sentence of under the underlying society of natural resources conservation. I think we should add the rationale for why we believe that it's in the air, and that would be possibly through the addition of a last sentence. There would be kind of lengthy.
That's fine, read it out.
Okay. However, as the group was not notified of this problem during their SAFC budget hearing process, for budget hearing, and currently has not reached the total amount of funding that the organization may receive. they should be distributing funding for their event as part of their primary funding request and not the co-organized event funding request.
Could I actually have the wording of that so I can read it out for the record? So this here is an amendment to the amendment. So under the on the new printout, under the Society for Natural Resources Conservation, on the first line there, we're crossing out not err. So we're crossing out not. So it now read the SAFC did err in denying funding. And then we're adding a new line saying, however, as the group was not notified of this problem during their SAFC budget hearing process and currently has not reached the cap in the total amount of funding that they may receive, the organization should receive funding for their event as part of their group's primary funding request and not the co-organized event funding request.
No.
I promise you it was no. There's been a call to question on the amendment, and there's been a second, and there's a dissent. So therefore, we will vote to vote. Yes, point of information.
Yeah, we're just accepting, so
if we vote yes for this amendment, we revert back to debate on Danzer's amendment, including this, assuming there's just one amendment. All right? So I'm going to restart. We have a motion to vote on the amendment to the amendment. Is there dissent to that?
Second.
There's been a call for acclamation. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we are back to the original amendment with the inclusion of Pendleton's, Representative Pendleton's addition. I just wrote it down.
Okay.
And now we are going back to the speakers list. And next on the speakers list is Representative Lunardo.
How's that side, please? Sorry.
None of you. Sorry, I didn't mean to throw it at you. Representative Feng.
Yeah, so first impression that I would say I'm going to probably go and give you a bunch of advice. So maybe my spiel doesn't matter. But I think there are a couple of things that I want to talk about. The first is what's been going around, basically people, you know, making decisions at hearings and stuff like that. There's always the biggest caveat that we tell all organizations that no decisions are going to be advocated, right? So independent of people, you know, saying you're funded, you're not going to be funded, no decisions are made, and that's the reason why we have oversight over it. That's the reason why, you know, the executive board checks over the budget. That's the reason why Karen checks over the budget. Because when you have over 400 organizations being reviewed in a 3-day process, and all these different institutions, people are coming back into all right, there's bound to be kind of different things, different kinds of errors in the day. That's the first issue, right? The second issue is the matter of the caps in terms of COVID, right? And I think that does bring up a good point insofar as we should promote, actively promote organizations that work with each other on various projects. But the one thing that we have to consider is we have caps for a reason, right? We have caps because we want to fund as many organizations as possible. I always thought that our goal is to fund as many organizations as possible, not necessarily have one organization sponsors many of that sponsors, right? And that's the reason why we have the school we have, because if you think about it, you know, one organization can sponsor 10 different, you know, cohorts with other organizations, and all of a sudden they're getting 10 times the money that is available to an organization that only, you know, has one cohort or doesn't have a cohort at all. Again, I'm not going to change the semantics of the amendment. I feel like that's moot, and I don't think that FASB actually erred on this issue, but I do think they should get funding, so I'm probably going to vote for the amendment anyway. That's my show.
Thank you, Charlie. Okay. Are there any motions on the floor? Huh? We have a call to question. We have a dissent. Therefore, we'll vote to vote on the amendment. Thus, so when I ask you to raise your placards, it will be if you would like to move into a vote on the amendment. So, if you vote yes, we will go ahead and move into a vote. If you vote no, we will move back to more debate. So, if you would like to vote yes to vote on the amendment and not move back to debate, please raise your placards. We need 2/3 majority to approve.
Sure. 14.
If you'd like to move back to more debate, please raise your placards. Six. So the motion fails, and we will move back into debate. Next on the speaker's list is Representative Proust. Wait, hold on.
14 to 6 is it?
7 is half of 14.
Yeah, wait, no, we need 2/3.
14 is more than double 6.
Yeah. So the motion does pass, actually. Sorry. ILR math. My mistake. I got corrected by the ILR, so it's all right. The motion passes, excuse me, so thus we will move into a vote on the actual amendment. The call to question passed. Yeah, we're voting on the amendment. Okay. Yeah, so this is just a majority vote to pass the amendment. So thus, if you'd like, I will read the amendment as it stands, yes. So,
wait, but was it the amendment you wanted 2/3?
No, just the full resolution needs 2/3 to pass.
Point of problem number 3 is because I asked myself, but I didn't actually get to it. What is the voting requirement for on the amendment to the resolution and on the resolution?
On the amendment to the resolution, it is a majority vote. To pass the resolution, we need 2/3 majority, because it is a committee decision.
So the resolution is a committee decision.
Yeah, so we're not overturning it.
Yeah.
Is it not?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the point. So... I know what you're saying.
So what should we do?
Okay, we will make it 2/3 to pass this amendment. All right.
Wait, why?
Because we will be overturning the decision of a committee, and by our standing rules, we need 2/3 majority to overturn a committee decision per our standing rules. All right. Thus, I'm also going to assume that we're going to need 2/3 majority to pass the entire resolution.
To pass it would be a majority.
Oh.
To overturn the whole thing would take 2/3. To pass it is just 1/3. To overturn that, it would be 2/3. over the entire thing.
Okay.
For this, I think that an amendment probably shouldn't have been made, looking back, because the amendment is doing the exact opposite of what was brought forth, which you should instead just decline. You should... Okay. Instead of...
So the problem with the way you
So
the SASC appeal guidelines say that in order for an appropriation committee decision or recommendation to be overturned, it needs to be overturned by two-thirds. The appeal serves as the overturnment.
Hmm.
Therefore, to pass the appeal into the resolution, you need a two-thirds vote. To pass the document as it is,
you need a majority.
Accept the appropriation committee recommendation.
You need a majority. So, well, we're going to be going two-thirds majority to approve the amendment and a majority to approve the resolution. All right? Because we're overturning the Appropriations Committee's decision. All right?
Is that,
you have it?
Yeah.
All right. So that is, and we will have to review. We will have to review the way we do this procedure in the future. All right. So let me reread the amendment as it is written. So Society for Natural Resource Conservation, under their paragraph, in the first line we are crossing out the not, and we're adding at the end of the paragraph, however, as the group was not notified of this problem during their SASC budget hearing process and currently has not reached the cap in the total amount of funding that they may receive, the organization should receive funding for their event as part of their group's primary funding request and not the co-organized event funding request. That is the first part of the amendment. The second part of the amendment is under the bulleted list on the last be it, or the second to last be it therefore resolve clause. The SASC did, we're crossing out the not and writing, the SASC did err, and at the end of the sentence we are adding, the SASC decision will not stand. That is the amendment, and we are moving to vote on the amendment. We need two-thirds majority to pass. Thus, if you would like, and we will go roll call vote, if you'd like the amendment to pass, vote yes. If you'd like to reject the amendment, vote no. May the clerk please call the roll.
No.
Proxies, yes.
Yes.
You can't proxy.
Why?
Because it's SASC appeal.
Even though he was here?
He was here, though.
He was here
for the appeal.
Yeah, he was here for the appeal.
Yeah.
That passed. Yeah, by a vote of 14 to 4 to 3, the amendment passes. Congratulations, Society for Natural Resources Conservation. You have your funding. Moving back to debate, and now you may, if you would like to stay, you're allowed to. If you'd like to leave, you don't have to. And now we are moving back to the main speakers list on the full Resolution 23. We have a resolution, Representative Block. Move to call the question. Is there any dissent? There's dissent. Would you just like to vote? All right, we're going to move to vote to vote. Would you like to just explain your dissent?
Resolution 24?
No, Resolution 23.
Oh, I'm sorry, no. I thought we were going too quickly.
Yeah, okay, we moved to dissent. Thus, is there any dissent on voting for Resolution 23, the full document? No. So again, we will go back to as we decided, the majority vote passed. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes. Doctor, yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh, yes.
My vote is 17-1-3. Resolution 23 passes. Dan, thank you for staying. We will be doing this again next week for a final round. Hopefully all the appeals will be done by next Thursday. But SAFC, thank you for staying. Moving to Resolution 24, opening up academic minors to all, Representative Block, and that's it.
That's it. Oh, oh.
Representative Block, you have 4 minutes to present your resolution.
Something that involves the oppression that I talked about before. One of the reasons why I came to Cornell's motto, any person, any study, and the idea that students and kids can really get any sort of education they want. But I think that one of the biggest problems right now, making up in terms of our academic program, is the fact that a lot of the minors are restricted based on what you want to do. For instance, all of the applied economics of the minors are all the minors. I understand that some of the problems with engineering is that it could be difficult to get all the prerequisites and all the sources in mind. But I have to urge everyone, simply because a minor is difficult to achieve, does not mean that it can be achievable. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I've learned.
Is this respectful?
I talked to Vice President Susan Murphy recently. She said one of the reasons that it possibly might be really underrepresented is that class sizes, they might not have enough class. But I think that first off, there are a lot of students today who, in talking to juniors and seniors and stuff, and to my other class, that they made the prerequisites. For instance, there's students in Iowa who have taken all the classes that they've taken out in A minor, but they don't get to receive that position. And I think that's the problem right now, because there isn't the administrative block simply not allowing you to graduate with a minor and taking all the classes. And more importantly, if there's such a demand for these minors, then the school should provide them. And I think that's important as well.
All right, so just as a point of clarification, this is still new business, so we're on questions only, unless there's a motion to move to the business of the day, but there's been motion to move on business of the day, and there's been dissent, thus I'm assuming we're going to take a vote on it. If, according to our procedure, sure, if you'd like to explain your dissent. Alright, so we are going to move into a vote to vote. If you vote yes, then we will be voting on whether we will move this. Actually, no, there's no need to do that. This is just a vote whether we're going to move it to business of the day. Alright, so if you vote yes, then we're moving to business of the day and we can vote on it. If you vote no, then it stays as new business. We'll ask questions, and then presumably next week it will come as business or unfinished or business of the day and we'll vote on it. Point of information.
I would imagine this would take more than 1 week to further come up with some of the reasons behind it. So we motion to table it for maybe a couple weeks or table it until postpone this amendment indefinitely or something like that.
Yeah.
You can't have a meeting.
But we can either what?
Yeah, postpone definitely goes ahead of move to business update.
So we have a motion on the table, all right? So we are going to consider. We're withdrawing the motion. We're keeping it to business of the day, all right? So we're back to questions, and first on the speaker's list is Representative Kurt.
And all the money that's from ecology are open to everyone, any university, all state, and representative. And I know that a very popular option in ecology is actually taking a major day because they think that it's from the player. It's a switch to be represented in a minor, and I know there's one word about it, but it's not a switch anyway. So, there are people that are late to the line, but it's a resolution.
I guess my one thing is, have you spoken to anyone in the AP department? Is that a big case? Have you spoken to anyone in my engineering?
You have 1 minute. Next is Representative Smith. Representative Proust. Most of my students are full-time because they're
of the market that they're trying to attract agencies.
Representative Rao.
So, I think that there are a lot of reasons behind Cornell, a lot of colleges not being able to minor outside of the college, because contract colleges versus the endowed schools, people paying different amounts of tuition, different schools have different missions, arts and sciences, it wouldn't really make sense for there to be an A minor because you have to take 100 credits within the college. And I'm sure engineering has another college that's similar things. As J.D. Murphy said, class sizes, years of precedent behind this. I really think that, a mere student assembly resolution is not going to just change it like this. If you wanted to maybe open up debates to administrators and maybe form a committee that looks into this, I'd be much more willing to approach it that way. Another thing, minors have to build up classes to get still. And there's nothing stopping you from taking classes outside of your college. I mean, there's certain requirements as to how many classes you must take within the college. So that, I think, speaks to Cornell's motto of any person that we study. So, minors, in the end, they don't even do it under transfer. So I think if we want to look at this, then maybe we should further discuss this, but I think this resolution kind of serves a purpose. What? Oh, yeah.
These are supposed to be the first question.
What purpose is this resolution?
Okay, so I'll respond to a couple of things. First off, I'd be very wary of anything that would be something that's precedent. Secondly, I think that if you have minors, the reason why they're so good is the program is so instead of just taking a couple classes, if you've already taken multiple classes, you're incentivized to take further classes to find the development skill set. So I think that that's an important thing. And in terms of the contract colleges versus the outcome, I really think that the goal of the student assembly is to do things that help students and people. And I really think that if there is a push, want this, then it shouldn't be a matter of whether or not this is going to go down in college, or whether or not it's going to go to the college, or whether or not, rather than this is what the students want right now. And I think that there are various students who wouldn't want the opportunity to be able to mine.
Representative Golrajani.
Yeah.
Representative Jenkins. Yazwick, Representative Yazwick.
First off, I'd just like to commend you on having your first meeting. Congratulations on your being
definitely a lot of practice. I need to know that, as I'm sure you're very aware of that,
seeing as how the time is 6:30, unless there's a motion to continue. There's a motion? All right, there's... All right, well, we are now going to go into a vote on that motion. The motion is to extend the meeting by 15 minutes until 6:45.
It's a majority vote?
Yes, by majority vote. So if you would... Voice vote. No, if you would like to extend the meeting until 6:45, please raise your placards. Four. All right, please. Seeing as how we will be, these will just revert back to business of the day next week. It doesn't really. All right, but we have six or seven, right? Please raise your placards again once.
Five, six,
seven. All right, please put them down. If you'd like to adjourn, please raise your hand. Please raise your placards. By a majority vote, the meeting is adjourned. Everybody, I have bad news. We are going into executive session really quickly. So if you could please push into the tables, we have to make one committee appointment. All non-voting SA members or ex officio members, please step out of the room. Thank you.
You're on the agenda.
Bum, bum.
Hey.
Oh man.
How are you doing, man?
I'm alright, and you?
Yes.
Great.
Well, no rush. Calm down. Calm down.
Oh, yes, I am.
I mean, no, they didn't even take the time to apply for funding from another source.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.